Hey there, Friday Night Movie family. You are listening to a very special South by Southwest episode of the Friday Night Movie podcast. Tune in for all of the exciting interviews we have coming to you this week and beyond. And if you're at the festival, we hope you're having an amazing time. Here we are, and welcome to another South by Southwest episode of the Friday Night Movie Podcast. We have with us the first of the cast members of The Floaters to appear on our podcast, but he's not here to promote the movie. Because
we can't talk about the movie.
No, the movie is still under wraps. You're only allowed to repeat what's in the Kveller article.
Right.
It's the only thing you're allowed to say.
Which I'm holding in my hand right now.
Yeah, reference it.
I'm actually just here to read the article to us.
Right. He's a very gentle voice. And we also have a special guest we have with us. This is funny, for an episode that is not about The Floaters, we have with us producer and writer, one of our esteemed, amazing writers, Andrew Gordon, who also went to Jewish summer camp. So Andrew's voice in this movie is everywhere and so important. So we have Andrew Gordon hanging out, too, also here not to talk about The Floaters.
We have people from Floaters today to exclusively talk about anything but The Floaters.
But I just want to say, I love this reunion that we're having here at South By and bringing, you know, some of our family members back together.
This is the dream. Us to be back at South By doing the pod and then hanging out with people we made a movie with. This is the best.
This is the dream.
This month reunion since we
Oh, wow. Is this the first time? I've seen you, Andrew. I've seen you in person, though.
Well, I
saw you in November.
Like once a week on Zoom. Yes. So, and I talk to you every other day.
Exactly.
You don't see me because I actually skipped dinner that we were supposed to
there
go
you go.
To.
Well, it's okay.
Accidentally, you know.
He's a very busy man. But that's what we like to hear. We like to hear that the Floaters are busy. Right. We still refer to you as the Floaters as a group.
Yeah.
Anyone who played anyone conceivably the age of 18 in the movie who
is
a floater, even the bad guys. But you were one of the good guys. So, we didn't say your name. This is Jacob Benjamin Moskowitz, who plays One Nut in The Floaters.
That's right.
Which who will go down, I will say this, I'll reveal this, One Nut will go down as an iconic character in the world of Jewish summer camp movies in history.
Oh wow.
I promise, based on what my kids have said about the cuts of the movie, One Nut is
very popular among our audience.
Yeah.
Yes.
I am so glad.
Yeah, the confidence with which you introduce yourself as One Nut is to me like just one of the best things I've ever seen.
I feel like that's the one moment in the movie I had to get right because I kept trying to when I first got the audition, I was like, he has to be called One Nut. He has. It can't be. I'm like Tommy. Do we can call him Tommy, right? He's like, no. His name's One Nut. And I was like, when the IMDb came out, I was like, oh, his name is One Nut on the IMDb. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, is.
If we this put is, it, if we, no, and I love One Nut. I love One Nut. Yeah. No.
And
his lore is.
I get it because at first you think like the real name is more personal, but then as the story progresses, like the nicknames become actually the most more like emotional.
Absolutely.
The character.
Absolutely.
The more intimate,
and the nicknames are a big part of the story and a big part of camp.
The summer like, camp experience.
There's a dude I went to camp with. His name, his self-announced name was Rat Boy. And
Rat Boy?
Rat Boy. He's still going by. I mean, he's
told me this.
He's like a very important like emergency room doctor in Baltimore. I don't think his patients call him Rat Boy, but we still do sometimes.
Some of his patients do.
Yeah. So, but you aren't here to talk about this. You're here because you have a movie at South by Southwest, which is amazing,
Absolutely.
Jacob.
I'm so excited.
So what are you here to? You're here to Y2K.
So Y2K is premiering tonight at the Paramount. A24 produced it. It's a horror thriller comedy directed by Kyle Mooney.
Who's freaking brilliant and made Brigsby Bear one of my all-time favorite movies.
Oh, he's a genius and so funny. And it was so much fun to work with. And was written by Evan Winter, also a genius. Rachel Zegler and Jaden Martell are starring, and Julian Dennison, and so many other young people. So it was great. We shot it, I think, about a year ago. So, yeah, I think it was a year ago. Big party scene, and It's gonna be a lot of fun. I'm very.
Who do you play in this? Are you allowed to say who you play?
Yeah, yeah, I play Trevor.
You play? Oh, I thought Trevor. You were gonna say I play Three Nut.
Three Nut.
No. That's. I feel like if Floaters continues to go on, right? If there's two or three more movies, he has to grow a nut for each movie. So you get Two Nut and then Three Nut. But no, so Trevor. Yeah, and it's about Y2K.
Is it weird to be in a movie about something
that we all the rest of the people in this room not only lived through, but were like grown, like we were grown.
We were like a little bit concerned the world, computers were going to break.
Teenagers, like I was a teen. Yeah, were you in college yet, or you were still in?
No,
I was in college. I was in high school. So, like, we were old enough to, like, understand the fear that was going through everyone.
Like, right. Like, what we were led to believe is, like, when they invented computers, nobody thought the world was going to last this long.
Right.
And as a result, when Y2K strikes, all of the planes are going to fall out of the sky.
Yeah, like, they're literally, like, everything's
plane crashes.
Everything's going to reset to zero, and all technology will cease to exist.
The index will, like, reset or something. Yeah. I remember reading about it. So I actually just did the math in my head, and my mom was in her first trimester with me when Y2K was happening. So maybe there's some form of, like, some form of trauma instilled in my...
Or, like, genetic memory about
something,
it?
Something deep, you know, that I brought to this movie potentially.
Oh my gosh.
I guess
a lot of trauma passed through the womb.
Yeah,
but for the record, I'm curious what everybody did on
Y2K
New Year's Eve. I was at a huge party that our parents threw at up in the country at our cottage, and we were like going in the hot tub and rolling in the snow, and there was like a big, they threw like a huge party up there, and I was a teenager and I was there with a bunch of my friends.
That was in my not participating in whatever the family was doing on winter vacation phase.
That was like one of the best New Year's Eves.
And I believe
so much fun.
It was so much fun, because especially it was so being much fun. Like a teenager, there was something like dangerous and
right. We were just like
exciting about it.
Yeah, we were all like up out in like the woods basically. And
we were afraid enough. I was in my 20s. We were afraid enough that we all went to, I believe, Naomi Wall's house in, was it Naomi's house? Yeah, I think so. In, it's like very specific, in Côte Saint-Luc in Montreal.
Really?
And then like the world didn't end at midnight. There was like 10 of 20 of us, I don't know. And the world didn't end at midnight, and then just took a cab home. And that was
the world just ended at midnight. It was really anticlimactic.
Yeah, that was it. Andrew, what'd you do?
I was just at like a New Year's party with a bunch of friends in high school, and it was actually a really fun party. I think everyone was actually disappointed when nothing happened at midnight.
But it was on your mind, which is interesting.
Like, were like,
really, it was really
like,
serious,
but like really serious and really worried, but like also at the same time it seems like everybody was just like throwing a party and having fun with like the full expectation that you would just like drive home when the party was over or get a cab or like go to like. No, we weren't like stockpiling food or worrying about the apocalypse.
Now, this could, Y2K could be the reason for a lot of our problems. Because here was this moment where we were told, like, the world is going to end. Right. All of your technology that you've tried to create is going to fail.
Right.
And some scientists figure out how to re-index everything, and we were fine. So now, like, I think there's probably a lot of people
that
see,
no
like,
consequence?
The world ending and the climate changing, and they're like, oh, the scientists will figure it out, like, Y2K.
And then think about what happened since
it's
then.
True.
It all went downhill.
Well, I was going to say, like, I feel like with AI, like, there is some sort of resonance, like, especially, and I think it's interesting it's premiering here, because this is a really big techie, like...
Oh, yeah.
And I literally bumped into a robot on my walk over here, and I was like, what the... Like,
what did it look like?
I've never seen a robot in my life, you know?
What did it look like?
It looked like... it was one of those food delivery robots.
Yeah, food delivery robots.
So it was purple.
It had, like, a little flag, and then people...
And it did. It was like,
get
me, and I was like, whoa, what's... Like,
I had an incident with one. They're not supposed to run into you, but I full on ran into me like when I was crossing the street and pushed me into the street
I've seen people in Berkeley get really mad at the food delivery robots and like kick them over, and then they're like little turtles on their backs. And
but what happens if someone just like, what's to stop you from hijacking the food delivery like robot and being like, oh, I could use a burger, and just being like, excuse me, robot, I'm taking your food. Like, how does that
happen?
I wonder
if it has a seal on it or something.
I think your phone unlocks it.
Yeah, you can't just unlock it.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah.
Which but like, real talk, if you were delivering food, if you were delivering DoorDash, right? Mm-hmm. And someone like orders McDonald's, which happens from time to time in my house.
I'm having deja vu. I feel like I just heard this.
No, I'm just saying like I would not be a good driver. I would 100% steal fries. I could not drive for 5 minutes with fresh McDonald's fries in my car and not have a handful. Yeah.
I have DoorDashed in my life and I have eaten customers' food. I have done that because you're just hungry. You're doing it for 12 hours. It's like they'll never notice.
You never think of DoorDashing someone to your car. It's like they drive up next to you like the Pony Express.
Like the DoorDash or the DoorDash?
I want to alleviate your guilt because I can see that you're like, I feel bad about this.
No, I feel bad. It's, you know.
In my server days, I was known for like, it was an Italian restaurant and people would order the big plate of calamari, and I made a skill out of walking to the table carrying the calamari and surreptitiously grabbing some off the plate and shoving it in my mouth on the way to the table, so I would be done chewing by the time I dropped it.
That is,
you're starving. It's like, and it's never anything that they would notice. Like calamari, they're not going to notice, or like a garlic knot, they're not going to miss. You know, they're not going to miss it. French fries are not going to miss. They've got plenty.
It's exposed the different numbers of things when I order things. I love Instacart and DoorDash, but this explains why sometimes there's
widespread epidemic of like DoorDashers stealing.
Like that's so weird. This order of wings has 12, and this order of wings only has 4.
They messed up my order, and then like DoorDash is paying money, and like it's the middleman all along. Yeah.
So Jacob,
it's forgivable.
Y2K? This is an ensemble, I guess.
Yeah, it's so huge cast.
You did an ensemble with us. You're in another ensemble. Oh, yeah. You're great at like hanging out with other actors, as we've seen, but you're also great at acting with them. How do you find the space? Like, how do you manage that space and build your chemistry with these large groups of folks?
That's a good question. I think the shooting of the movie becomes the movie for everything I've ever done. Like with Floaters, the thing I'm most excited for people to—I'm not going to talk about it too much. And I know we're talking about Y2K, but there's a parallel. And I had more time on Floaters than on Y2K. Our relationships that we were building outside of the movie became the movie. Mm-hmm. And then the order in which you shoot things, it doesn't matter.
It really shows on screen.
And that's what makes the movie exciting. And I think you're going to see something really similar in that we were in a house for a week throwing a party.
That's
fun.
For this New Year's Eve scene, that is the sort of first and half of second act of this movie. And it shows, you know, it's like, oh, what can we find here? And then we'll put the camera over there. And like, okay, there's more to this relationship. We can make a joke here. There's a bit here. And like, that's all Kyle too. You know, but I think it's, I don't know. It's just, it's the magic of movie making. Cool. You know?
And those people. Kyle, go ahead.
I have a follow-up question for you. So on that note, I'm not being an actor myself. I would find being just with a big group of people in front of a camera, in front of a crew, pretty terrifying. Is there something in particular that allows you to relax and be present and have that chemistry, like with your, is there something that like on set that allows you to feel, I guess, more at ease and ready to play and do that?
I think it depends on the set. Like, I don't know, preparation. Mm-hmm. Preparation, the more prepared I am, the more relaxed I am. But also, like, I feel like if I'm too prepared, I can't have any fun. So it's always the balance between, like, precision and spontaneity, being able to feel super relaxed. I don't know. I haven't really figured it out. I feel like it's interesting because auditions and the way that you prepare a scene for an audition versus being on set are two completely different experiences in that you're crafting a beginning, middle, and end for somebody to watch on their computer later versus when you're on set. there's the tree, there's the stick, there's the there's the party, there's the people. You just be there, right? And like, you can sort of, I actually can't see very well, which is, I should wear contacts. I have glasses.
I feel like
okay.
We've had this conversation. We've definitely had this conversation.
And you've asked me, it's like, how do you tune out the camera? I'm like, well, I can't usually see it. I am actually nearsighted, LASIK, so I'm typically with the person.
It actually works.
It does, you know?
Before I had LASIK, that's how I was able to do the high dive. So I was like, well, I don't know how far I am.
And it's like, and I've been on stage before too, and it's like, well, how do you just like forget that all those people are there? And it's like, well, I can't see a thing.
Don't wear contacts.
Just, you know,
that's great.
But I think I should probably
get some. That's a great answer. Be prepared and like, don't wear your contacts.
Right. Don't wear your glasses.
It's such a good answer.
Try to mess up your vision. There you go. You can. I don't know. Relaxation is hard, though, because it's in school, because I trained and it was I was so nervous the whole time I was going through training, which I think ended up being the lesson after 4 years of somebody telling you, like, relax, 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 relax. And it's like, or like, breathe, breathe. I'm like, makes it hard to breathe when someone is telling you to breathe versus like. And it is the relationships, like we said. Like, I don't know, every night of Floaters we were playing, we had game night. Every night was game night. And so we just brought a sense of play to.
Wait, and you're really good at chess. Don't you play a lot of chess?
I still play chess with Matt. I still play chess with Jake.
I feel like
Jake
my kids.
I have like a 25 game streak going on right now.
I feel like my kids played chess with you. Did my kids play chess with you at one point?
Yeah,
they loved that.
You definitely played Uno at one point.
Oh, yeah. Uno was rough. Yeah. Lily got upset with me because.
Yeah, well, Lily.
I got really intense with her kids in Uno.
Yeah. I think they still talk about it.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember that.
I know. I was like, oh, man. She's like, all right, I care.
They need to learn how to lose, those kids.
Yeah. Someone's got to teach them, you know? Yeah. That's my personal vendetta.
was just like the way in which you guys, like, art imitating life and life imitating art, and right. The way that you bonded and, like, lived.
We went to camp.
Yeah.
We went to camp. I felt like, and you know how, like, you never forget your friends from camp? They're lifelong friends. That's how I feel about that cast. Mm. And, I mean, Y2K, I had a lot less time on, but I still talk to those people. We still hang out in the city because
that's great.
It was such a rich experience. And
all right, Andrew, I want to throw in some Andrew because we have Andrew here. Okay, right. Here we are with a young actor.
Oh boy.
Okay, and you've been working in independent film, and I feel like independent film is like this amazing place where you get to find like people before, you know, before they are whoever, before they're the Chalamet or the. What's in your experience when you meet a Jacob or any of the kids, quote unquote, how do you pick the spark of someone who is like coming, you know, cause I know behind the scenes how passionate Becky and Andra felt about making Jacob was in this movie.
No, and Lily. We cannot forget Lily.
How passionate. That doesn't say other people weren't, but we all had our people during the casting.
You can say that you weren't excited.
No. It's not that. It's that we all had different moments in the casting process where we were like, that's the person, that's the hill I'm going to die for. I want to ask Andra, who's cast like so many movies, like, what makes you have that moment, especially when you're like, you're in the indie world and you're picking them for the special, unique passion project, but also they could be, you know, huge.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard thing to actually articulate because it's a feeling. It's just like an intuition where you just know that someone has that deep access, to be able to, and just layered and range and, you know, on screen charisma, which like, I was very passionate about casting you and I'm not just saying that cause you're here. It was actually one of the just memorable moments in the casting process. But it's interesting. It's hard to articulate, but you just know, it's just a feeling.
All right.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. And sometimes it's interesting because I mean, As we all know, casting makes such a big difference. I mean, like, the way you write a role and envision, and you know, sometimes it can go in either direction where, you know, you envisioned it one way and then there's a wonderful surprise in the way that an actor takes it to a whole different place. And then, you know, there's the other version where it's like, you know, it's not a fit. And you know, you just have to find what's mm-hmm. the balance there.
Very, very cool. And do you have like a, do you have a moment from, you know, whether it's South by Southwest or the time in the independent film world where you were just like, oh, that, like you had a lightning strike moment, other than, of course, Jacob Benjamin just Moskowitz.
Like someone that I...
Yeah. Yeah, someone that you saw or you've seen where you were like, oh, I just, you know, like...
Well, I mean, let's see. I'm trying to think of, like, one that really stood out for me. I mean, I obvious, but, like, before... I knew that... I've been working with Alex Wolff for a while, and I knew that, like, before he sort of had his...
Before Jumanji and...
trajectory, mm-hmm. that he was one of those. Like, when I saw him in Hereditary.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Like, that's cool.
That, yeah.
That's
great.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Jacob, is this your first big red carpet...
Festival
oh, yeah. kind of thing.
Yeah.
Tell us about the experience. You're getting a fit? Are you getting a do?
Well, thankfully, I
this is Allie's just laughing at me saying these words.
A fit or a do.
I just learned the word fit.
Oh, fit? Fit check?
He had to hire someone to teach him.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that offline.
He doesn't know this stuff.
Andrew, you will laugh so hard when I tell you the story, but this is not for the podcast just yet.
You know, I don't know. It's like it's a part of the industry I haven't had the opportunity to experience yet. This is the first time that, because I graduated a year and a half ago, right? So all of the work that I've shot over this last year is now starting to come to fruition, and this is the first time I actually will ever see something I've been a part of on a big screen.
That's cool.
Tonight. This is a huge deal.
And so, like, you know, the red carpet, the dressing up, it's like new. You have to sort of, it is its own thing. It's not acting, but it is acting mm-hmm. in a way. And
you got to put your hand on your hip, and
you're gonna smolder. Like, back picture, yeah, exactly. So it's not.
I,
it's not
I could never do it because I always go with this shit-eating grin whenever I'm.
That's what I do.
Too. Oh, man.
I just
when he was getting his badge photo taken for the festival, the woman's taking the picture and she just pauses for a second and she goes, "So I just want to make sure that's the face you want to make, right?" Swear to God, verbatim, that is what she said.
The exact words she say. She was super nice.
She's so nice.
She turned out she was from the same town that we live in, yeah. So we had a great chat after.
But that is what she said to him.
She said, is that the face? Is it the face you want to make, or is that the face you want to have?
Is that the face you want to have? Something like that. Oh, she said, is that the face you want to have? And you're like, oh, I can't do much about that.
I sincerely hope tonight someone, before they take my picture, gives me like that heads up. They're like, are you sure before we take this picture? We have time here, you know.
I can figure it out. You just get blindsided by like Getty images like showing up on the internet
mm-hmm.
and, like, right. at parties and events, and there have been a few that I'm like, oh my god, I've like literally spent hours trying to figure out how to
eradicate this
off
photo.
The internet.
I believe that 1,000%. And I believe if anyone could get their picture off the internet,
if you take a picture of Andra, she will absolutely commandeer your phone after and make sure only the proper ones remain. Yeah. Your role.
Okay. So one thing we love to do in every episode of the show is we want to know people's recommendations. What do you want people to watch? It doesn't have to be like a political answer. You don't have to like
just something you love that you want to share. You know, recent, old,
but just like not a book. Okay.
All right. And for Shy, it can only be a documentary if it's about music.
The only books that are allowed are these books that are movies called documentaries. Those are allowed.
Okay.
Documentaries, the movie.
And Andrea, also, I feel like you always have great recommendations. What are you watching these days? While Jacob thinks.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one that I like have watched three times now and watched again recently over again. One of my favorite series of all time is Dead to Me.
Oh, yeah. Oh. You and Lily are big fans of that, right?
Again, and I just think it's so brilliant, and it's it.
That's Christina Applegate.
Yeah, it's Christina Applegate.
Oh, and that series is perfect.
Yeah, and it's just brilliant in terms of, it's such a hard tone to get right, in terms of having like the dark humor work and then the thriller element and the relationship, and it's so well cast and their chemistry is amazing, and especially like, you know, the way we did in Floaters is having two women in their 40s be the center of a show, and it's what I aspire to, just, you know, from a creative standpoint of like, that's, I love that. Like
that show's pretty perfect. And it's one that's really satisfying. Cause I think there's three seasons and it doesn't need a minute more. And it's so satisfying and it's so well done, and it pulls your heart apart.
Yeah.
And it has James Marsden.
Yeah.
Which is just so great.
Yeah.
Where the Mars Descence is happening now.
Thank God. Finally.
All right, Jacob.
I actually met James Marsden.
Yeah.
If you meet him now after having seen Jury Duty, is the first thing you're going to like ask him is about like Sonic the Hedgehog? So that's it.
I actually still need to watch Jury Duty.
What?
Yeah. Oh my God. Good. Jury Duty. That's my recommendation.
Get it queued up for your
flight. We
it's very addictive.
We're planning to in our theater when we get home.
Oh, okay.
On our list. Yeah.
The James Marsden stuff in that is incredible.
Yeah. So good.
Okay.
All right, Jacob, you've had
we
time.
Okay. My two answers. So I just recently watched Perfect Days, which is a new movie.
Oh, I haven't seen it. I love a new one.
It's beautiful. It's about just a toilet cleaner in Tokyo and just his life. And it just follows him for a couple of days. It's really beautiful. And then the other thing is The Sweet East, which is Sean Price Williams' film with Talia Ryder. It's just like in modern day Alice in Wonderland with like a really severe like American backdrop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Very cool.
Very cool. So I saw, those are two movies I saw recently. I had to check my letterbox because I freeze up anytime. Mm-hmm. And it says, what have you seen recently?
It's really nice. Letterbox is very important that way.
I really want to see that. Matt, my partner, loved it.
The Sweet East?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was a great time. Yeah. Great time. Yeah.
He helped with that too.
Oh, did he? Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
that's so cool.
I loved it. I mean, it was. There's just this opening sequence. Not to spoil much, but like out of nowhere, you don't even realize that everything that you had been watching. It's one of those things where like you didn't realize that everything you've been watching was prologue, and then you get like an opening credit sequence like about like 20 minutes into the movie, via song, and like out of nowhere, like the genre just like slaps you in the face, and it's incredible. Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah,
that's really.
And Talia Ryder is just
thank you.
It just really, I don't know how she's a unicorn.
She's well, really that sounds amazing. And I get excited when the credits come in 10 minutes into So Help Me Todd. So I feel like this will be amazing.
Rallo Brown.
Yeah. Jacob Benjamin Moskowitz.
It's Vitz, but it's Vitz? Okay. Yeah.
Oh, so, our aunt's last name is Moskowitz.
Moskowitz, I think, is the more, I don't know, more common.
I mean, they would Moskowitz. Both could be pronounced that way.
It probably.
It's a tomato tomato.
I also
thing,
think it's
maybe.
Like an Ellis Island, like someone wrote
yeah.
A,
yeah.
Someone wrote a V.
Yeah. But I mean, like, it depends situation. Also at, like how Ukrainian I think you're pronouncing it. Jacob Benjamin Moskowitz. And Andrew Gordon, we had like a mini Floaters reunion.
Very special.
But we're celebrating the release of Y2K, which we're going to hopefully see later today.
Yes.
And I'm sure it's going to be awesome. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Friday Night Movie, the sibling rivalry and pop culture podcast. Join the Friday Night Movie family by following @FryNightMovie on all of the socials and visiting our website, FryNightMovie.com. Our theme song is by What Does It Eat? And make sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.